This is Blue July, and you're listening to the Be Someone podcast. Lights looking bright, the H got the vibe. She's my name on the signs, it's my time to shine. When I was cruising 45 and it crossed my mind that I shine like the sun and that I'll be someone.
Lights, camera, session, use the flow molasses. Blue July, my fashion, future bright and glasses. Applause from the masses.
This is the Be Someone podcast.
Hey everybody, this is the coach Chris Ortiz inviting you to check out my website, coachortiz.com. On the website, you'll find my newest book, Drive Slow, which is a love story to our great city, Houston, Texas, and then also a dedication piece to my recently deceased father, Ruben Ortiz. But you could also find the other episodes of the podcast and then other books that I have released or will be releasing. So y'all take care, have a blessed day, and go out and be that someone. Hey everybody, I appreciate y'all dropping in and listening to the Be Someone podcast. Today we have a very good friend of mine, Nick Waite. Me and Nick go back a long ways, used to train jiu-jitsu a while back, and now Nick is actually in the legal cannabis industry out there in California. Through his life experiences, you know, he's come to the realization that that it's not all bad, that, you know, I guess compared to some of the traditional Western medicines that were prescribed, that it's actually probably something that's beneficial to someone that's battling a number of different ailments. His mother struggled greatly with fibromyalgia, and you know, he just really believes that, you know, there may have been a different ending to his mother's story if she had access to this legally, you know, and it's really influenced the direction that he's gone, you know, moving forward. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Hopefully it's informative. I feel, you know, neither one way nor the other. I just think that it's great that we keep an open mind and we look to, you know, I guess untraditional medications to solve some of our problems, because truth be told, there's 100 different ways to skin a cat, and who's to say, you know, one way is better than the other. You know, the results speak for themselves. So you take care, have a blessed day, and y'all go out and be that someone. Hey everybody, this is the coach Chris Ortiz at the Be Someone podcast, and I got a very special guest today. I got my man Nick Waite all the way out there in California. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, how you doing, coach? Thanks for having me on, man.
Man, it's been a while. What's it been, like 4 or 5 years?
Oh no, man, we're going more than that. Let's see, I was out there in 2009. I got to Gracie Baja, the Woodlands, 2009 April. Yeah, man. So we're going on about 10 years.
Man, I remember you left. You were a blue belt when you left. So I don't remember
the year. Yeah.
But I remember the color fabric that was around your waist.
Yeah. I'm still there at the blue, man. Unfortunately, I you know, had some medical stuff go on with my back, and you know, some slipped discs here and there. Kidney stones was another one, man, that hit me pretty hard. But I'm still able to roll around on the ground with the nephews here a little bit, you know, do a little jiu-jitsu here and there, but not really competitively like I was before.
Man, interesting. Let's get into your background. Tell me a little bit about yourself, what it was like growing up, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm originally from Southern California. I was born in Anaheim, California. You know, man, I had a pretty close knit family. We were a pretty religious family also. My family was LDS growing up, so it was a pretty strict, strict household, you know, as a kid growing up as a Mormon kid. You know, from there, my family moved, to Riverside, spent a little time there, and then moved to the San Joaquin Valley, a small town called Porterville, a little farming community. Agriculture is really big out there, man. It was a really cool spot to be, you know, as a kid. But yeah, you know, as far as family and growing up, some things were a little bit difficult, you know, as far as medical things that I faced, things that I saw my family face also. So we went through some interesting trials growing up.
Tell me a little bit about your parents. Let's start with your mom. What was your mom?
Yeah, sure. Well, my mom, she, like I said, they were very involved in the LDS church. So my mom also grew up Mormon. So that was something that was very, very strong with her and on her side of the family. Very, very loving woman, man. Very supportive. She ended up getting very sick, though, later on in life. She was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is, you know, a very broad term. I'm sure that you've heard a lot of people maybe mention fibromyalgia. It's basically a diagnosis, widespread pain, symptoms that doctors don't really know where to put their finger on and pinpoint where it's coming from. So they kind of give it a broad term, fibromyalgia, and treat it as a pain disorder, pretty much. So about my teenage years, man, I was going on about 12, 13 years old, and she was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And at that point, they had placed her on a lot of pain medications, man. We're talking opiate narcotics. We're talking medications to help with sleep, anti-anxiety medications, you know, and this was all just in one slew, man. You know, she had a whole bunch of meds that were on board just daily. So watching that as a kid was something that I didn't really know how to handle at the time, honestly. You know, but it was an experience that actually made me stronger later on in life, definitely.
Yeah, what does that do to a young man to see, you know, one of the most powerful figures, you know, in the world to be in, you know, consistent, you know, in pain every single day? What did that do to your psyche? What did that do to you emotionally? You know,
man, it definitely wasn't a normal childhood. You know, even though I knew my parents loved me very much, I knew they cared for me, but yeah, they were very much wrapped up in what was going on with that and with the sickness. My stepdad, who had actually raised me, my biological father had left by the time I was 3 years old. My mom remarried before that, but he ended up adopting me at the age of 3. He was, you know, as supportive as possible, but he really didn't know how to deal with the situation either. But watching that was a pretty rough thing to watch, man. And as far as myself, you know, I was exhibiting some symptoms that were similar to her. As far as, you know, back pain and, I was having all kinds of stuff, man. It was pretty crazy. I would have days where I would wake up and it felt like my body just wouldn't even function. You know, it's kind of hard to even describe. But, you know, later on in life, and I'll tell you that later on through the broadcast. But, we kind of figured out what it was later on with me. But unfortunately, my mom had passed by the age of 22 when I had reached 22 from all these ailments. But, you know, and to the day that she passed, man, no one ever really put their finger on what exactly it was, you know. But at that point, I mean, all of the medications that she was on, all the drugs, all the, you know, and never a street drug. I mean, we're talking all pharmaceuticals, all doctor prescribed under a doctor's care. She followed also her medication dosages. I can't say as a kid that I ever saw her abuse her medications intentionally or anything like that. It just wore her down and eventually took her life later on.
Being able to see all that and watching her take all these medications, did these medications have like any negative effects on her that you could see that made you question like,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Why are you taking these medications? You know, this one's making you, you know, more this or more that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, just the look in someone's eye, man, you know, once they've taken something, that is going to alter their brain and their body that much, you get a look in your eye to where there's just no one there, you know, no one's home. So I would see that a lot. And there were times when actually I'd be walking in just to make sure that she was still breathing, you know, because I know of the cocktail that she had taken that, again, was prescribed, you know, for her to take just to be able to get to sleep or for her to be, you know, be in some sort of state of comfort and to have some relief. So, yeah, man, you know, things like that really were pretty jarring. were a pretty interesting experience to go through. Yeah.
Well, something else that you also mentioned is you mentioned something about a nephew and him getting leukemia. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. Well, as I mentioned, my mom had passed away and I was exhibiting some of the same symptoms. We actually shared the same doctor and he had me on the same medications. By the age of 13, I was on injectable Demerol 3 to 4 times a day at home. As a teenager, yeah. And then also I had, you know, in between, if there was breakthrough pain, hydrocodone or oxycodone for anxiety, things like Valium, Xanax, Clonopin. And then for sleep, he would also prescribe us, you know, an Ambien or Sonata or something to that extent that's a sleep aid, Lunesta, things like that. So with us having the same doctor, he pretty much put me on the same cocktail without actually getting down to the base problem of what was going on with my health, how I was feeling, what was causing these symptoms, and not just treating it so that, you know, go home, take this, feel better, don't come back. My nephew later on, though, when after my mom had passed, we had learned, I was living in Colorado at this time. It was actually after I was had moved out of Texas, but we had learned that he was diagnosed with leukemia. And that news was, man, it was earth shattering. It was my sister's youngest son. She has two boys at the time. He was 5 years old. When I got that phone call, I didn't really know what to think, man. I didn't really know how to register it in my brain, how to process it, really what to do at that point in time. It was something that really shook our family, especially so recently after the death of, you know, my mother and my sister's mother. So we were pretty scared, and you know, and with me being a couple states away in Colorado, I just, you know, at that time I couldn't imagine what my family was going through. But yeah, it was something that was pretty brutal.
What did the treatment do to someone so young? Like we see what the treatment can do to a healthy, you know, adult male or female. You know, heaven forbid, what do these treatments do to these young people that are not even, you know, physically mature yet?
Right. Well, initially, he started his chemotherapy. Generally for boys, chemotherapy goes on a little bit longer, especially in the case of leukemia. So they keep the boys on chemotherapy for about 3 years, regardless of their test results. Let's say the 2 years down the line, they're looking a lot better. Right. So they'll keep them. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. They'll keep them on the chemotherapy and medications that they don't particularly need per se. I mean, I'm not a medical doctor, but you know, if test results are coming back that things are okay, you know, it's kind of interesting that they'll keep them on these medications. So my sister actually got really interested in digging in this stuff and kind of the politics behind it. But the reason is that, you know, a lot of these companies have deals. The pharmaceutical companies have deals with these politicians as far as what they're going to charge, how they're going to do it. And cancer is one of them, man. I mean, it's a population killer. And what they're doing is they're making money off of these medications that they're keeping these patients on for X amount of years. And then from there, they're going to see, you know, how much money they're going to be making off of their future, what their potential is and what they're going to earn, what they're going to make. It's just absolutely insane. Putting life to the side, you know, putting quality of life to the side and just looking at dollars. And that's just absolutely insane. So he started his treatment at 5 years old. He was eventually done 3 years later by the time he was about eight. And yeah, man, it was a great day. He made it through and he survived. But the reason that he survived was also because his parents chose to pursue medical cannabis, which, you know, honestly, man, looking back at my mom, I feel that it could have saved your life and she could have been here with us today also.
Yeah. And the whole reason that I asked is because it kind of brings us to, you know, what career path you've chosen to take, you know, as of late. Like we were talking about earlier, it's been a while since we've seen each other. You know, we were rolling around on the ground, jiu-jitsu partners, you know, strangling each other, you know, chatting afterwards. You know, but one day, you know, you're gone. You know, you're in Colorado, I believe. You know, and then
I went up there to go help with the Wounded Warrior Foundation, Wounded Warrior Foundation that Chad Robichaux was going ahead and starting up there. So I had done that. He was moving the foundation to California, and I kind of felt like my time wasn't really done there in Colorado. And you know, some things happened where he was making some business decisions and I was making some life decisions that kind of went the other way. And I mean, hindsight 2020, I kind of wish that I had maybe come back to Colorado, honestly, but it led me in the direction, man, to where I am very happy now and with what I'm doing and pursuing my life goals and being able to, you know, to help people out with what's helped me.
Well, hey, well, let's talk about that because, like I said, I've been keeping up with you on Facebook and, man, I've watched you grow from idea to, you know, someone that's making the idea, you know, come to fruition to someone that has seen this idea through and is now, you know, benefiting. So let's talk about the business that you're in, Nick.
Yeah, man. So I am in the legal cannabis market here in California. I work for a legal dispensary called Speedy Weedy. You can find us at speedyweedysd.com. What we do is we cater to the medical and also the recreational community as far as cannabis. So we have a storefront that's in the city called Vista, California, down here in San Diego County. And then we also do a delivery where we deliver to all of North County here in the San Diego area.
Let's get into what are the benefits? And I'm going to start with the benefits on like society. One of the things that I've noticed is that our prisons are populated, heavily populated, with a lot of nonviolent offenders. I'm a big fan of, making people, do the time for the crime. But I think there's some crimes that don't warrant, throwing people in a cage and then getting rid of the key. And I think that, again, possessing, a small amount or getting caught using a small amount, I don't think that that warrants, treating someone like a dog, at the animal shelter.
Right, man. Well, I mean, just along with the medical stuff, man, let's get back to the base problem. Why are these people seeking out cannabis? I mean, what issue are they having in life or medically? What's the reason that they're looking for it? Why don't we aid that instead of just going after these people and trying to punish them for a crime that we're seeing as something that's immoral? We're trying to punish people for basically, what I see is them trying to maybe seek for some help, people usually seek out cannabis because they're in pain, they have some sort of anxiety problem or some sort of issue where they're not able to deal with depression. These are all issues where you can go to your doctor and say, hey, this is what's going on, and you can have dialogue and they'll tell you, what you should do to treat that, or they'll prescribe something to treat that. So with cannabis itself, all the research that's been done to date, there's still zero deaths as far as cannabis overdose, just in and of itself, just using just cannabis, there are zero deaths. So why not look at cannabis being used as something medically to help people instead of putting them in cages? Just like what you said, man, why are we punishing these people when they're trying to find something to help them to aid their life?
I agree with you wholeheartedly because I do know firsthand some of the negative side effects from anxiety and depression medication. The apathy one can feel when they're on, that medication, and that apathy could lead to someone, possibly doing something that's harmful to themselves or harmful to others. And I've asked myself, why not this other option? What is your line of thinking on that? Why is this other option, cannabis, why is it frowned upon?
Right. Well, me personally, what led me to it was, as I said, when I was younger, the doctors and people that I were talking to had kind of seen the same symptoms as what my mom was going through. So they placed me on those same medications. But as I saw her deteriorate and, eventually die, I knew that I just did not want that for myself. I didn't want my family to have to go through that. Heck, I didn't want to go through it. So I looked more deeply into medical cannabis, and started using myself to help pain. And then I was also diagnosed with a pain anxiety disorder where they believed that, the stress and tension and things were making inflammation worse. And, so I thought, okay, well, I'm taking 10 medications here. There's 10 bottles, or I can have this one plant-based medication that'll knock all these out, that'll help with sleep, it'll help with anxiety, it'll help with pain, it'll help with everything from appetite to being able to just get through your daily life, I had found great success with it, man. So later on, I just kind of felt that it was my mission to go ahead and tell people that it's okay. It's okay to use cannabis if you can use it responsibly. And if you're using it for a reason, it's going to better your quality of life and also help your family out. Because if it's keeping you sane, man, that's going to, of course, keep your family sane. So, through my own kind of trial and error and kind of figuring out what worked for me, and I'd also changed from seeing a lot of medical doctors to more naturalists. My sister had got me in connection with a doctor that was a hematologist, actually, that was taking on my nephew's case. So he went ahead and did a blood test, put it under a microscope, and within about 15 15, 20 minutes, he told me he thinks I have an autoimmune disease that's probably attacking my kidneys. The reason why I'd had 13 kidney stones in the last 3 years. Yeah. And, you know, and it's crazy, man, because once I started pursuing it more and getting in touch with the people that I needed to, I was getting answers. You know, I was getting healthy. I was able to function in my life. You know, I was able to go out and pursue the career path that I wanted to do. So I guess that, you know, my mission just later on came to be that I want to be able to tell people that it's okay to pursue that also. You know, it's okay to look at other avenues. It's okay to go against the grain. It's okay to follow your gut feeling. If you see something that you know is going to be successful and it's going to help you, go for it. Do it. Go get it and do it the right way, because you can be able to spread that knowledge to other people.
Well, yeah, and the holistic approach seems to make so much more sense, because it's an approach where you're front loading everything. You are, you know, you're eating better. You're trying to take stuff out of your life or out of your diet that doesn't have as many preservatives or doesn't have as much, you know, pesticides. Just being in better shape, being in better health. You know, all these are better answers, in my opinion, than, you know, going to the doctor and then getting a cocktail of 10 different pills. Like, it's
exactly, exactly, man. Yep.
And I would, you know, venture to say that, you know, having this flower as opposed to this cocktail also seems like the easy answer. Like, sometimes they say, like, the most simplest answer is the correct one, right?
Right, right.
This may be the most simplest answer to a lot of these problems that we have.
It may be, man. And, you know, when people think of, you know, medical cannabis or consuming cannabis, they automatically think of, you know, smoking it or, you know, inhaling it. But there are different ways that you can, you know, take the medicine, man. There's, you know, edibles, there's salves where they have lotions that actually absorb into your skin. You know, there's we even have a spray that just sprays under your tongue. You know, it administers just a little bit at a time. Yeah. Yeah. It's some crazy stuff, man. Now they have inhalers in Colorado. It's pretty crazy, man. There's different routes of administration. And the more that we're able to research it and the more that we're able to get some legislation to pass some of these laws, hey, man, the more that we're able to find the ways that is the best route of administration other than having to do something that feels like or looks like taking a drug also. We just need some research into it. That's all.
That's a good point that you make. Just the visual, you know, if someone's smoking, it's visual. You know, you associate it with thugs, you associate it with people that are loose with their life.
Right.
If you were to put it like in a pill, if you were to put it like in a cookie form or something, like automatically that stigma disappears. Mm-hmm. So that's a great point. What are some things that Colorado and California have done to, I want to say, treat it like alcohol, to whereas like alcohol is still legal, right? But if you get pulled over and you have a blood alcohol, you know, content or BAC of, you know, X, you know, they're going to pull you off the street, put you in the back of the car and take you to jail. What are some of the similar measures that people have taken or law enforcement has taken in Colorado and California?
Right. Yeah. Well, as far as law enforcement goes, they've tried a few different things. They were actually trying to pass kind of like the same as the alcohol breathalyzer test for DUIs. They had a little bit of trouble there. The reason being that cannabis stays in your system a little bit longer, so it metabolizes slower. So let's say that I consumed 3 days ago. I'm driving on the road 3 days later, get pulled over. If they want to test me for one reason or another, I can come up positive on their test as far as being intoxicated, just based off of how many nanograms is in, you know, the bloodstream and what they specify as being an intoxicating level. So they had some issues there as far as that goes. But so they went back to the actual packaging, back to the dispensary, and back to the cultivation. So what they had decided to do is, as far as releasing the product, you actually have to release it in a specific, it's a double lock bag. And then from there, we seal it again in another specific bag to where it's childproof containers on top of a bag, on top of another bag, on top of another bag. So by the time you're actually in the medication, you're at about 3 different to 4 different seals on the actual container itself. So they did that. And the way they figure is that if you're leaving from the dispensary where you got your medication, getting home, that should still be sealed until you get home, and then you're legally allowed to consume at home. As far as regular DUI tests, though, if you're pulled over and then they suspect you of being intoxicated on cannabis, you'll still go through a regular DUI test, you know, like you would walk the straight line and, you know, and stuff like that. So there's definitely still testing for it. The states still see it as illegal to drive under the influence of cannabis. But once you get home and you're in your own home, you're able to consume.
Interesting. Let me ask you about Colorado and California. Is Is it just lawlessness out there, or people out there in the streets shooting everything up? Is it turned into reefer madness, you know, so to speak, or does life look
right?
Like-
Yeah. 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 You know, and that's what some people were worried about, that, you know, organized crime would come in and take over the business, you know, and, you know, mafia ran states is kind of what people were worried about. But no, actually we saw a decrease in cartel activity, especially here in California, man. We're right here on the border. With these legal dispensaries coming in, California has actually licensed up to this point. We're at about 870 dispensaries statewide. With that, man, we have seen a huge decrease in cartel activity. We basically were able to take away their cannabis, all their cannabis clients, you know, and we found the reasons of why they were looking for cannabis, and we're going to go ahead and service those people. And, you know, and it's worked, man. It's really worked. And that has created tax revenue that we're putting back into the states. Here in California, we're looking at a 15% retail tax, and that's just on cannabis. And that's not including another 7.25% state sales tax. So you're going to have that 15% with a 7%, and then another 9% that's another cultivation tax. So at the end of the day, you know, the taxes are a little bit higher than what I would like to see, but it's putting money back into the states and into programs that are helping out, you know, with just the public in general. In Colorado, they put a lot of the money into building schools, man. It's actually pretty crazy out there. They also put it into repairing roadways. So if you ever venture through Colorado, you're on a major highway, chances are you're going to see this highway is sponsored by, and then it's going to have a name of one of the major dispensaries there in Colorado, because they sponsored the cleanup. They put tax dollars into taking care of the roads, repair, things like that. Out here in California, we're looking at about a 60% of the money from tax revenue. That's 60 going into anti-drug and youth programs. So at-risk youth programs, also education as far as drugs, kind of like the DARE program, what we went through as kids. It's, you know, something kind of similar to that. Yeah, yeah. So in trying to keep, you know, kids away from dangerous narcotics and things on the streets that they don't need to be around, you know? So it's really good that we're putting money into that. Another 20% is going into the environmental side of it. So environmental cleanup, kind of like what I mentioned with roadways and things like that. And then another 20% is going into public safety. So we're talking about like police, you know, and things like that, with what they need as far as law enforcement to go after and catch the dangerous criminals, you know, not the ones that are seeking medication.
How much money do you think California has generated because of legal cannabis sales over like the last year?
Yeah, well, we're seeing annually about $635 million alone here in California. It's a little over that. Since the initiation of Proposition 64, which makes 21 and over available to get cannabis, or able to get cannabis, we're over $1 billion. We're well over $1 billion just since that initiated. We had Proposition 215 that actually started in 1996, but that was medical only. So through that 20 years until 2016, they weren't really paying any taxes, you know, to the state. There was nothing really set up for the state to collect any money off of it. So it was just private, what we call collectives, or groups of patients that were, you know, kind of growing medication and distributing to each other. So the state wanted to find a way to be able to tax these guys. And if they made the cut to be able to, you know, to conduct business and pay their portion to the state. And this is what they've come up with so far.
Do you see this as something that's going to go nationwide, like in the next like 5 to 10 years? Or do you think that there's going to be some strongholds that hold off?
Yeah, man. You know, there actually has been in the House, I believe they were talking about already doing a federal act. This federal act would add another 5% tax, though, onto cannabis. And that money, of course, would go to the federal government. You know, man, I don't know that I'm comfortable with that 5% tax, just because we're already paying so much in taxes. Maybe if the individual states were to come down, I'd be okay with it. But yeah, to answer your question bluntly, yes. I see that every state in the United States eventually will legalize, whether it be just for medical reasons. I mean, take Utah, for instance. As I said, I grew up in a Mormon and LDS family, very strict Christian family, and they're even looking at medical stuff out there, man. As far as their medical side, though, what they're wanting to do is no smokable flower. So they're just talking about, you know, edibles like the concentrate pills or the salves, lotions, and things like that.
Man, I'd definitely be cool with that too. You know, like again, it's if you're using it, you know, for those reasons that are going to, you know, benefit you physically, you know, hey, why not? What are some of the, like the health benefits that one can get from cannabis? You mentioned earlier, like sleep, anti-inflammatory. Go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a deep one, man. So cannabis has many different active cannabinoids, man, hundreds of them. They do different things. So different strains will do different things for you. You have some strains, which we call the indica variety, which is more geared towards, you know, as you said, like sleep and things like that. But they're also finding strains that can help with, I mean, just off the wall stuff, man. Take obesity, for instance. Heart disease and obesity are one of the major killers in this country. They're finding cannabis strains that are actually helping to suppress appetite and want to get you motivated also, like emotionally, mentally. You know, I mean, these are psychotropic medications. They will work on your brain as far as the THC itself. But there's also, you know, there's CBD, CBN, THC, THCA. There are so many different compounds in there and so many different strains that do so many different things. Another one is we're finding that CBN actually helps with killing cancer cells. It'll help kill cancer cells. So while the chemotherapy is going into effect and helping your body, so is the cannabis at the same time. It's not only aiding in your symptoms from the chemotherapy that you're getting, but it's also helping your body fight the cancer. And man, like I said, the more that we legalize, the more that we can do even more research into this. But there's people out there that have claimed that they have stopped chemotherapy altogether and just switched to cannabis concentrates and been successful with getting rid of their cancer just with that.
What about like societal wise, like what have you noticed around about the people out there in California, the people out there in Colorado? Is it seem to be like a more chill, mellow vibe? Because you've lived in Texas. You love Texas. I love Texas. Yeah. What is the vibe out there?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, when I was in Texas and compared to California, honestly, man, the people are pretty similar. The only thing that I would say is, you know, of course, with politics, you know, with California being a blue state, there is some more liberal activity here, definitely, which I'm more of a conservative guy myself. So there are things like that that I do prefer in Texas. But the fact is that whether your political stance is conservative, liberal, cannabis can help both sides. And we're seeing, you know, more so on the conservative side, some people are, you know, coming out more saying, all right, well, maybe there is something more to this and let's look at the medical stuff and, you know, and things like that. But yeah, as far as, you know, as far as crime and things like that, that's gone down. You know, our jails are less filled with, as you said, nonviolent offenders. So, you know, we're taking people off the streets that are actually hurting people, you know, that are doing things that are really, really bad stuff. So, you know, if we were to maybe look at that more so in other states, you know, that haven't legalized cannabis yet, then, hey, if that's not a pushing factor, then I don't know what is. You know, if we can clean up our streets, then why not? Why not?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely believe that there's a hierarchy of people that, you know, should be in prison. And again, nonviolent offenders, I think they fill our prisons up. And there's a lot of bad people that you see go and commit a crime and then recommit a crime after they've been, you know, out on bail or whatnot. And a lot of that has to do with just prison overpopulation.
Right. Yeah.
What do you see like as the future of the cannabis industry? Where is it going? What are some things that maybe like I'm not even aware of? Because you mentioned something about like it enhancing someone's motivation. Normally it's like the right. You hear of like how takes away your motivation, and you just blew my mind with that.
Yeah. Hey man, for a guy like me, like I said, you know, I was at a point in my life where I was waking up and, you know, I was in pain and I would take that narcotic. I would take that painkiller. You know, I would do what I needed to do. But later on when I found cannabis, I would take that instead. And, you know, man, it's just something about the way that my body felt. I was in so much pain, and then being able to take something to where I feel relief and I don't feel the side effects of the narcotics. You know, I don't feel sick to my stomach. I don't feel like I'm going to fall over, you know, on my face. It just affects my brain specifically to where I'm able to focus on what I'm doing and being able to put aside that pain that I'm going through. You know, if it doesn't alleviate it all the way, then it, you know, it sure as heck makes it so that I'm able to function. So there's that side of it. Also, yeah, there are strains that are called sativa strains. You know, down in here in the medical community, we kind of refer to them as daytime strains because, you know, like where someone might wake up, have their cup of coffee, you know, get ready for the day, get their little boost. Yeah. Well, that's what the sativa strain will also kind of do for you. Yeah, it has those cannabinoids in it that just affect your brain a little bit differently to where it doesn't make you so lethargic, but it actually activates things a little bit more and gets you thinking, gets you more active.
Golly, man. Oh, that's crazy. Like you just equated it with a cup of coffee. And again, I guess traditionally what people think, it's like it's going to slow you down. It's going to slow you roll. It's going to make you lazy. But we all know that coffee is something that Americans wake up to each and every day, have their cup or two. They even go to Starbucks and pay $5, $6, $7 for a cup, you know, and it gets them going. So, again, that's news to me that there are strains that wake you up like coffee. Interesting.
You're right, man. Yeah. And and it's not anything that's too jarring. I mean, you drink enough coffee and you're going to not feel too good, you know? and the same thing goes for anything else, man, all things in moderation, you know, but yeah, man, I mean, they're seeing great results too in the medical community, as far as giving these things to even patients where, they were taking antidepressants before. So, my own doctor before, he suggested, well, what if you were to try different cannabis strains to help with maybe some emotional, you know, stuff going on or some depression issues. And sure enough, man, if you get the right strain, it'll give you that little boost to get going. Yeah.
So you've explained to me like a lot of positive, you know, things, manifestations that can come about, you know, from the cannabis industry. What is holding it back? I know that there's a stigma, but there also used to be a stigma on alcohol. We went through a period of time, you know, with prohibition, where it was viewed as, you know, the devil's juice. You know, why is this still the devil's lettuce?
Right, right. Well, man, a lot of it, like I said, with myself again, growing up in a religious home, the whole anti-drug thing was a pretty big thing in our house. You know, if we did drugs, you know, I did drugs as a kid, I would get in trouble, you know.
We're not advocating that either, though. You know, like if you're not 21, you shouldn't be drinking either, right? So the same for cannabis.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's the same rules that are set in place. So yeah, it's 21 and over. I mean, you can receive cannabis if you're 18 and over with a doctor's recommendation, but you need to go to your doctor. They need to approve it. There's a whole process with that. But yeah, for the most part, man, 21 and over. And they're pretty strict with these rules too, man. It's, you know, it's not like the Wild West out here. It's not where, you know, everyone on, you know, the corner is, you know, selling, you know, weed out of their house, or it's not like that, man. It's a pretty regulated market. And that's giving people the opportunity to get into a legitimate business to where they've having to also been hide it, you know, for the last 15 years or so, 15, 20. There's even, you know, families that have been in the industry for generations since the 60s up in Northern California, having to keep it quiet, but now they're getting the chance to come out into the light, bring their art, you know, bring their business, bring their, what they're good at to the world and be able to help thousands, if not millions of people.
Do you think it's the pharmaceutical companies? Do you think it's the cigarette industry? Like what's holding it back?
Yeah. You know, yeah. As far as holding it back, man. Yeah. I'd say that the lobbyists, that's the biggest issue. As I said before, taxes are great. It's good to put money back into the community, but the amount of tax that is being put on is maybe a little bit too much. And the reason I say that is when you go in to start up a cannabis business, some of these people aren't able to afford what it takes to get into the business, even though they have the best intentions. So I think that maybe there needs to be a little bit more work done as far as where to distribute the money, you know, where it's going. Of course, the programs that they're putting it into are very good, man. I really don't have any complaints about that. I just wish that maybe the tax was a little bit lower and money was distributed maybe just a little bit different.
All right. And something else, too, and this just hit me like a ton of bricks, but I was listening to a Rogan podcast and they were talking about like all the different uses for hemp. Also, which is a part, right, of the cannabis industry, is the hemp industry?
Correct. Yeah. So cannabis is actually a pretty broad term. So you have cannabis, which is containing. So think of cannabis like a family, right? And then within that family, you have the children, which are hemp. You have regular marijuana, and then they also have what are called ruderalis plants, which those are plants that are from way back east, kind of over in Russia and stuff. And they're kind of like a mix between hemp and actual marijuana. But yeah, so the hemp, actually, it contains less than 2% THC is how they classify hemp. What we're seeing in hemp, though, is it contains a whole lot of CBD. And CBD, as you might heard, is great for inflammation, which, you know, there's CBD also in the regular marijuana strains, you know, the ones that are psychoactive. But there's not as much CBD as what we're seeing in the hemp. So they're utilizing hemp for, you know, for different things, for clothing purposes, for, you know, for making paper, everything down to ropes, down, you know, materials, basic materials that we can use every day. But they're also making medicines out of it, utilizing only that CBD compound. And we found that actually CBD is, yeah, it's really good for the body, man. It does a lot better for the body. Even we're seeing, like if you were to take a recovery aid or an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen, a lot of people are having better results with CBD as far as anti-inflammation.
Yes, I personally take one for inflammation because of the years of jujitsu and rugby and baseball and just all the activities that I've done in my life. And I find that CBD helps with that that inflammation better than anything else. I don't know. I'm just not a fan of two aspirins. It just doesn't do it for me. Maybe I'm immune to that or something, or maybe, it's not strong
enough. Yeah. You know, I'm in the same boat, man. I understand. I feel you.
Let me ask you this then about like CBD shops, because there seems to be a number of CBD shops popping up over here in Texas. Are CBD shops, are they the people that have a foothold first, if and when marijuana becomes legal, you know, let's say like in Texas, or what is.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. The correlation though, isn't really, I could see why you would think that, but a lot of them probably would want to get into the industry, but really, man, it's kind of a first come first serve industry. That's where the taxes come into play though. If you're able to foot that, the cash that the government wants for you to be able to start up, then they're going to give you that license to start up. As far as actually knowing cannabis and knowing the industry, I could see how someone that owns a CBD shop would want to get into it and would definitely pursue that. But honestly, man, where we saw out here in California were the underground growers, those ones that have been doing it for so long that know how to produce a good quality medicine. Those are the ones that are going to be coming to light saying, hey, you know, we're here. We would like to get into business, and we would like to give our cut to the government.
All right. Well, we're getting to the end of the episode. What is the end game for you? Like in a perfect world, let's say like 10, 15 years from now, like you've taken all the small steps to get where you want to be. What does that end goal look like?
Well, I have found a true passion for actually cultivating cannabis, making cannabis, creating medicine and helping people with that. My end goal and end game to this whole thing that I've been doing, man, honestly, I would just like to be able to provide legally for anyone that needs it. And, you know, it's my firm belief that I think that cannabis should be available to people, and they should be able to grow it just as easy as they can grow a tomato in their backyard. You know, my end game is to make sure that people know that it's safe, and that it's something that we can work towards, we can talk to our government about, they're willing to listen to us. And, you know, if you've benefited from it, then maybe it's time, you know, that we can step up and come forward and help some other folks out. I would like to see it so that we can all be able to provide ourselves with safe medicine at the end of the day.
Man, that's a great way to end, man. Where can people find you on social media? Where can they reach out legally, of course, right? Because we're not, you know, trying to spotlight on anything illegal, but, you know, how could they find Nick Wade?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, I'm available on Instagram at unk_Nicky, N-I-C-K-Y. Yeah, man, and I take questions all the time from people that have questions about cannabis or the industry, and I'm more than happy to talk to people. You know, it's one of the great things about being in this business, man, actually, is being able to spread what's worked for me, you know, being able to spread the good news, man, you know, and it is something good, man. It's something to be happy about, and it's something great that's out there in the world that I think we should all learn to utilize.
Man, personally, I do too. You know, it kind of irks me that I have something in the back of my mind that's like, oh no, this isn't right. This isn't right. But there's also something in my heart that's telling me that, you know, this is coming and that this is right. And this is a better option than a lot of the traditional medicines that, You know, we're shoving down people's throats. I've seen my father, you know, before he passed, he got hooked on pain meds. And
yeah,
to see. I mean, he literally.
My condolences about that, by the way, man.
COVID got him, man. If I'm being honest, you know, his lungs were in poor shape, you know, prior to, but the guy still had a good 10, 15 years of life left in him. But the point I was making was, in order for him to kick that habit of the pain medicine, he had to lock himself up in his house, you know, for almost like a month, you know, and just go cold turkey and go through hell in order to kick that habit, because it had a stranglehold on him, and it was destroying him. I watched the kind of person it turned him into. It wasn't him, you know. So an alternative to some of these medications that we're being forced into, I think is high time. That's just my two cents. And that's why I wanted to bring you and talk to you, because I'd like to get rid of some of the stigma, even though there's still some stigma on my back as I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And, you know, and I'd be denying it if I said I didn't go through that or have those things in the back of my mind. But I think what it comes down to, man, we look at it as a morality issue, you know, what's right and what's wrong. With cannabis, man, I see that we're saving lives. I see, like, as you said, you know, with your own father, I mean, with myself, I went through my first opiate detox. I was 14 going on 15 years old, man. And I was in UCLA Medical Center. They locked me up for 2 months to try to get me off the stuff, you know, and it was a nightmare, man. Yeah. It was horrible. I was taken out of high school. You know, no one knew where I went. People thought I died, you know, had no clue what was going on. And the whole time I was just trying to get off the medications that they themselves had prescribed. But yeah, man, as far as a moral standpoint, we're saving lives.
Man, well, I want to, you know, say thank you, you know, for reaching out and speaking with me. You know, it's always an honor and a pleasure. It's really cool watching you grow, you know, your business out there, watching your beachfront home. And man, maybe one day I go out there and go fishing with you or something, man. You been catching anything out there?
Yeah, man. Oh, man. I've only been back in the whole fishing scene for about 2 weeks now. I used to a lot in Colorado, you know, doing rivers and lakes and stuff. But yeah, man, I'm trying my hand at the ocean. I'm learning, but nothing over 4 or 5 inches yet.
Oh, man, that sucks, man. Well, it don't matter, man. Enjoy it, man. It's a medicinal in itself, fishing. So maybe be a double dose of medicine, man, with the cannabis and your fishing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Right, man. Well, you have a blessed one, Nick. Thank you for giving me your time today, man. And you take care. And everyone, y'all take care and go out and be that someone. Bye-bye.
This is Blue July, and you're listening to the Be Someone podcast. Lights looking bright, the H got the vibe. See my name on the sign, it's my time to shine. When I was cruising 45 and it crossed my mind that I shine like the sun and that I'll be someone.
Lights, camera, session, use a flow molasses, blue to light my fashion, future brightening glasses, applause from the masses.
This is the Be Someone podcast.